morning. Council ready to proceed? At ease.
May it please the court, Deputy Public Defender Phyllis Hironaka arguing on behalf of Mr. John Estabillo. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal time, please. May I proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Defendant Appellant John Estabillo respectfully requests that this honorable court, number one, vacate the judgment convicting him of count 13, that is, attempted promoting a dangerous drug in the first degree, and number two, reverse the order denying his motion to suppress. Mr. Estabillo is entitled to this relief because his conviction is based upon evidence which should have been suppressed in violation of his rights against unreasonable search, seizure, and invasion of privacy, as well as to due process and effective assistance of counsel. Mr. Estabillo brings his primary claims under the Hawaii State Constitution, particularly Article 1, Section 7, since the United States Supreme Court's holdings in Wren and Cabayas have eviscerated Fourth Amendment protections for both pretextual stops and suspicionless dog sniff traffic stop searches. That's quite a mouthful, but I'm going to be referring that to that again. In view of the obvious and open invitation to police abuse, which would automatically follow court approval of both the pretextual stop and suspicionless dog sniff traffic stop searches, Mr. Estabillo respectfully requests that this honorable court grant broader protections under the Hawaii Constitution by explicitly forbidding use of both practices. Estabillo contends that the majority of law-abiding Hawaii citizens would be offended, intimidated, and outraged if they were subjected to either a pretextual stop or a suspicionless dog sniff traffic stop search. The trial court erred, and the ICA gravely erred, in three ways. First, by failing to analyze Estabillo's facts under State versus Bolasan. Second, by erroneously relying on State versus Barros. And third, by ignoring the fact that the drugs were discovered not by reasonable suspicion, not by probable cause, consent, or admission, but by forcing Estabillo to submit to a dog sniff search. Bolasan was a traffic stop case, not unlike Estabillo's. In 1995, this honorable court wrote that, quote, in determining the reasonableness of wholly discretionary automobile stops, this court has repeatedly applied the standard set forth in Terry and in Barnes, that the police officer must be able to point to specific and articulable facts which, taken together with rational inferences from those facts, reasonably warrant that intrusion. The ultimate test must be whether from these facts, measured by an objective standard, a man of reasonable caution would be warranted in believing that criminal activity was afoot and that the action taken was appropriate. The Bolasan facts presented the question of whether investigatory stops could be justified based on an offense other than the one stated by the officers involved. Yes.
Aside from the traffic stop by Officer Paoli, was there any independent basis, a reasonable suspicion for stopping Mr. Estabillo?
For the drug offenses, no, but for traffic offenses, yes. So we conceded in our briefs that there was a tax emblem discrepancy on his license plate and that he was speeding.
Did the prosecution ever argue that there was an independent basis resting on reasonable suspicion for a stop of Estabillo for a drug offense?
For drug offenses, no, I don't believe that they did. And that was, there was no reasonable suspicion. The only indication that they had that there was drug activity was an uncorroborated tip by an informant to the narcotics vice section of the CRU.
What was the theory of the prosecution at the motion to suppress?
The theory of the prosecution?
Yes. Why was the drug investigation valid?
Okay, basically they argued that since the investigation occurred within the time that it took to conduct the traffic stop, to, for example, issue tickets, check the driver's license, the sort of standard traffic stop things, that it was all good, that they could bring the dogs. Well, first they asked Mr. Estevillo. They said, "We're investigating you for drugs. You have anything to say? Can we search your car? Can we search you?" And he said, "First, I think I should talk to a lawyer." And that was ignored. And they then proceeded to insist on asking for consent to search the car, which he denied. And that did come out in the motion to suppress. And the police officers, again from the record, said, "If you don't submit or consent to a search of your car, we're going to bring a drug dog to sniff around the outside of the car, because under, I believe it's Groves and Snitkin, they figured that the airspace surrounding the car was free game." And so they did bring it, because he was there stopped ostensibly for the traffic violations. I think the critical thing, well, there are several things with regard to the facts here. The critical thing is that Officer Paoli, who is the officer that was asked to make the stop, he was the uniform guy with the lights, and as opposed to the undercover folks who were not uniformed and not easily or readily identifiable as police officers, he knew that he was making a pretextual stop. He knew that he was stopping to Mr. Sibilia to assist in this drug investigation, and that his job was to make a valid stop. And once that occurred, he watched the big boys take over the investigation and do what they were going to do. So he ceased writing the tickets. He ceased forwarding the so-called traffic reason. And so from our perspective, since that investigation had ceased, there really was no basis, because the officers said there was no argument that, for example, they saw any drugs protruding, or looked in the back seat and saw something that looked suspicious, or saw a pipe or something sticking out of Estevillo's pocket or anything like that. So there was no open view type of reasonable suspicion for drugs. It was just based on the information that they purportedly had.
Was he charged with any traffic violations?
I believe he was charged with traffic violations. They were folded into the case. But as far as did Estevillo get tickets from that offense, no. And I believe at the motion to suppress, Officer Paoli said that he was told that he didn't need to write out the citations because it was going to be folded in to the arrest.
So he never wrote a citation. He just stopped and just didn't write any.
He just stopped and he was observing what was going on.
Didn't he say he thought it was a narcotics case after he stopped the car?
He knew from the get-go, ab initio, that it was going to be a narcotics case, because Officer Prudencio was the narco vice officer. He contacted Paoli not by radio, standard police communication. He contacted by cell phone, and he said, I want this guy stopped. I know he's going to be at Ling's Chinese restaurant, at the Pu'ainako Town Center. When he leaves there, I've investigated that his tax emblem is expired, so that's a basis you can stop him for. And I want him pulled over so that I can investigate for drugs. And so Paoli was well aware as to what his role was in this stop.
What do you infer from the fact that communication was made by cell phone and not by dispatch?
I would say only that there was no record of his doing a pretextual stop, because I think police officers are aware that their broadcast transmissions are recorded. So there might be evidence that he was told to stop for this drug investigation. But so if you communicate by cell phone, who's to know? Returning back to Bolasan, although the question presented was whether you could justify the stop based on an offense other than the one stated, and although the bottom line answer was yes, it was a very conservative, cautionary, and qualified yes, due to the Hawaii Supreme Court's extreme concern with pretextual stops. And this was the...
Zero knock.
Yes.
What was the basis of the court's decision? What did the court decide?
The trial court,
yes,
in Estevillo's case ruled basically that the investigation was that the drugs were discovered within the time that it took to conduct a traffic stop, and so it was all good. Motion to suppress was denied. So essentially, they were going along the lines of Faro's, which is what what the ICA relied on in making their decision in this case, in affirming the judgment.
If Officer Detective Domingo had a reasonable suspicion to believe. Is it Domingo?
Prudencio is
Prudencio.
The vice officer?
Excuse me.
Oh, it was the stopping officer. I'm not sure which one he was.
Sorry.
That's right.
If Officer Prudencio had a specific and articulable basis to believe that criminal activity was afoot, in this case, with respect to any drug offenses, could he have made the stop himself?
I think his concern was that he was undercover, not in uniform, etc. And
so my question was,
could he have made the stop? Sure. I mean, if he had reasonable suspicion from articulable facts, but
the fact that he didn't make the stop himself, he was with other officers and another officer. What does that indicate?
Again, I think it indicates that he didn't have reasonable suspicion or probable cause, because he's asking Paoli to basically find a traffic violation and to check that the tax emblem on the back of the guy's car was, you know, either not current or, you know, appeared to be current when it really wasn't, etc. Some kind of a pretext to stop him. So I think it indicated that Prudencio knew that he didn't have reasonable suspicion or probable cause. Not based on what was seen or observed, etc.
Who was the informant or the informants?
That was never identified. It wasn't brought out at the suppression. So all we know is there's an uncorroborated tip. And so one of the reasons that we would put forward here is that police have other valid methods that are not, you know, like the ones that were used here. They could corroborate the tip. I mean, these are decades-old case law that police should be well aware of at this point. They could do surveillance or further surveillance, because they obviously have this guy under surveillance already, to, you know, gather additional facts, to get reasonable suspicion, ultimately get a search warrant perhaps, or something like that. They could have crafted an undercover buy where Mr. Informant was asked to buy drugs from him, and then they would have some reasonable suspicion, probable cause facts upon which to base further investigation of this gentleman. They didn't have to do it in this manner. Again, I'm sorry. Returning to Bolasan, the reasonable suspicion test under Article 1, Section 7. Yes, sorry.
Officer Prudential's police report not admitted in evidence. Was it ever offered in evidence?
I am not sure about that. But I know that of the evidence from his testimony, this was August 31 of 2007, he admitted that he had targeted Estabilio for the arrest. That's at page 7. He admitted he spoke to Paoli about assisting in the stop, also at page 7. He admitted that he told Paoli what kind of car to look for. That's at page 8. Expired weight tax, page 8. That he was at Ling's restaurant, that's between pages 8 and 9. He admitted that he was approaching to investigate drugs and not traffic, that was page 17. He admitted arriving at the scene with other officers, including a detective, page 13. I mean, these are not your standard traffic stop kind of things where you approach with a whole group of guys.
What was the police report used for? You know, it was marked as an exhibit.
That I can't tell you. I don't have an offhand memory of what the police report was used for at the motion to suppress. I mean, it may have been used to cross-examine. Are you saying that it was a state's exhibit or a defense exhibit? Okay. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't know specifically. I can't speak to that specifically. But I do know also from the testimony at the motion to suppress, this would be July 20th, 07, volume number 1, Paoli's testimony explained that he was assigned to traffic and not vice. That's at pages 8 and 9. That he was contacted by Prudencio half an hour before the stop. That's at page 9. He called him on the cell phone at page 16, asked to make the traffic stop, and gave him all sorts of information. That defendant was at the Kalinako Town Center, 1993 green Honda sedan, the license number, that he was the registered owner, and that the PC would be the vehicle tax was expired. So he gave him the PC. He understood that Prudencio was asking to assist in a drug investigation. That's at pages 17 to 18. He knew Prudencio was a vice officer. That Prudencio had told him that he believed there were drugs in the car, but nothing further beyond that. And that he has assisted in other traffic stops for Prudential about 2 times prior. And so those are other indicia, facts in the motion to suppress that appear to make it clearly pretextual. I'm sorry, returning to the Bolasan quote, basically what they said is that a seizure can be justified based on another offense, not necessarily the one cited by the original stopping officer, but it can't be just any other offense. And they highlighted or underlined, underscored any. And their concern was, in order to prevent post hoc justifications for otherwise invalid arrests, which is exactly what we have here. And footnote 11 of the Bolasan case said that we believe that the requirement that the justifiable offense be related to the articulated offense will adequately protect against wholly pretextual stops. And a review of the facts leading up to Estabillo's arrest that we just went over shows that the stop was pretextual. Paoli's stop of defendant was for speeding and for the tax minimum violation. That was the justifiable
offense. Is pretext your strongest position in this case?
We have two arguments. One is the...
No, it's pretext is the strongest argument in this case.
Pretext has to be the initial argument. So is it the strongest argument? I think that's really up to the court. The other argument, of course...
Is there any problem with the length of time that the car was stopped?
No, it was very short.
So if the length of time was fine, then what's your position?
Is that they cannot do, non-reasonable suspicion, drug dog sniff searches without some kind of indicia. And I understand that the U.S. Supreme Court has specifically come out against both the pretextual stops under Wren and the drug dog sniff searches under Caballes. But that's why we're proceeding under Article 1, Section 7 of the Hawaii State Constitution. Both of those they're extremely offensive. They're intimidating, they're intrusive, and they're not what I think the general population in Hawaii feels is sort of reasonable as far as police work. I'm going to skip here to the dissents in Caballes. Justices Souter and Ginsburg both wrote separate dissents. Justice Souter said let me start with Justice Ginsburg, said that in applying Terry, the U.S. Supreme Court has several times indicated that the limitation on scope, and she emphasized the word scope, is not confined to the duration of the seizure. It also encompasses the manner in which the seizure was conducted. The second observation that
That's
she...
That's what you argued
yes.
below, right, in the motions court, that this search exceeded the scope of the initial stop, which was for traffic.
Yes.
So we have precedent on that in terms of Perez.
Correct.
And maybe Alameki.
Correct. Perez is a very important case for us because it parallels, and it also came out of the Big Island as well, parallels the
what
happened here. Oh, is that so? I wasn't cognizant of which judge decided that case. But returning to Justice Ginsburg's dissent, she said, a drug detection dog is an intimidating animal, and injecting such an animal into a routine traffic stop changes the character of the encounter between the police and the motorist. The stop becomes broader, more adversarial, and in at least some cases longer, as happened in Estabillo's case. The ICA in Estabillo's case looked solely at the fact that since the drug narc vice people were standing by, that the drug sweep and all of that occurred within, a 10-minute time. So the drug dog had done its thing within a 10-minute period of time, and that's not, an unduly long time to hold a defendant. However, again, our position is that they need some kind of reasonable suspicion, and you can't just sort of myopically look at Barras and only figure on the length of the time. You have to look at number one, the reason for the stop, and also the nature of the stop. Because again, as Justice Ginsburg was cautioning, she said, you know, if you want to extend this thing, every traffic stop could be an occasion to call in the dogs, envisioning that the failure to circumscribe dog sniff searches could result in things like dog sniffs of cars parked along sidewalks and in parking lots, or police with dogs at street corners circling cars at extra-long traffic lights waiting for the red signal to turn to green. And again, I think those are really intrusive and offensive practices. There's something about the qualitative nature of a dog's search, and this even goes back historically, that, you know, to have a an animal, there seems to be a qualitative difference between, say, for example, like an airport search where you're going through a magnetometer or whatever, it's non-invasive, you know, as opposed to having an animal sort of sniffing up your, you know, your skirt or sniffing at your belongings. That's both threatening as well as offensive.
Well, an airport search is different because in airport search you have warning implicitly or explicitly.
Absolutely, but this is impinging upon just, you know, people's rights to be free within the state, you know, to travel the roads in reasonable
The Groves prevented, or Groves said that dogs should not be used for general exploratory purposes.
Groves did say that, and the ICA and the trial court here just kind of ignored that Groves had...
Well, is this a general exploratory search?
Mr. Acevedo feels that it's a general exploratory search because, again, there was no reasonable suspicion of drugs in his case. There was the traffic offenses.
This wasn't a case, though, of the police taking the dog down the mall and sniffing everybody or any package, right?
Correct, but they didn't have particularized suspicion of Mr. Acevedo other than the uncorroborated tip. So as far as they knew and as far as Officer Paoli said, he was stopping him for traffic, for speeding, and for the tax emblem violation, and there was no indicia of drug or you know, paraphernalia offenses going on. And apparently the items were, like I said, were not in open view. They had to get the dog to figure that out.
Is there an
Yes?
At a point in the discussion with the defendant, Officer Prudencio asked, he asked permission to have the vehicle searched.
Correct.
And during this discussion, the defendant asked for access to an attorney.
Yes.
And the officer did not comply with that request. He continued the process of searching the vehicle.
Yes.
Is that one of your arguments here, that there was a violation of his constitutional rights to an attorney?
Yes. So
Did the ICA address this particular issue?
No. And it wasn't, with all due respect to my colleague, it wasn't that well preserved below. So I did not argue that in the opening brief, et cetera. But it's clear that the whole thing flowed out of the suspicionless stop. Well, suspicionless with regard to drugs stop. But once the gentleman asked for an attorney, that should have been addressed, but it was just kind of overridden. And
That's a pretty strong argument.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the officers continued to press him for consent to search.
Was he in custody at the time that he requested for counsel?
I argued in my opening brief that he was in custody at that point in time because he certainly wasn't free to leave. Officer Paoli had blocked in his car from behind, and he had basically been swarmed by narco vice. So there was no, he was clearly not free to leave.
There was a right of counsel attached at that point in time, refusal to give him access, that would be the end of this case.
Yes. There. And later on, after he was formally arrested and taken to the police station, he was Mirandized, and he was shown all the drugs and things that they had recovered from his car, and at that time he gave it up and confessed. So we are arguing that his statements his admissions to the possession of drugs, etc., should have all been suppressed because it started way back at the time that he was stopped on the scene and asked for an attorney.
Was right of counsel argued below?
It was not specifically argued below. It was, I believe, that the motion and the arguments all focused on the stop and the evidence that accrued out of that stop. So it wasn't specifically, I don't think, argued below. But I found that problematic in the opening brief, as far as it should have been a red light, really, that his right to counsel and statements that flowed out of it and the drugs that were, et cetera, should have been observed. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. I'm going to try to shorten here. In applying Barros, where the focus is on the length of the detention and whether the detention was unduly prolonged, over Bolasan, Perez, and Terry sets a dangerous and undesirable precedent because it, number one, encourages police to game the system. In this case, Officer Paoli was pretty honest about what he did, but I can see in the future that one officer might leisurely forward the citation investigation into the traffic while the other officers pressure the guy into answering questions or consenting to a search, etc., which brings up visions of Quino, Kearns, Trainer, etc. But the state would be technically complying with we're still doing the traffic investigation. That was what they had tried to argue in this case below, that the traffic investigation was still going on. They asked Officer Paoli, how long does it take you to write a ticket? And those kinds of things were brought out. But again, it was that's a grave concern that we cite. Number two is that it diverts the analysis of the courts away from the reason behind basic search and seizure law into an empty or meaningless focus on the length of time to do the investigation. And those concerns would be the ones enunciated in Terry, Bolasan, and Perez about whether the investigation was limited in scope to the reasonable suspicion which justified the stop in the first place, that's Terry, whether the articulated offense is related to the justifiable offense, Bolasan, and whether the detention or the continued detention was based on pretext, that being Perez. And the other thing that I would note is that the pretext in this case arose after the initial valid stop. And so when the pretext or the intent to hold somebody longer than is necessary arises, can occur both before the stop, as in this case, because there was a reason, they were sort of gunning for this guy. It can also occur after, as in Perez, they didn't discover the little coin purse until after the guy had been in custody and being processed for his shoplifting. In conclusion, Mr. Estabilo contends that all evidence and statements must be suppressed and excluded from use at trial. Absent all of these items, there's insufficient evidence to support his conviction on count 13 or any of the other counts. Again, he respectfully requests that this honorable court vacate his judgment and conviction and reverse the order denying his motion to suppress. But more importantly, he asks that this honorable court protect Hawaii citizens by explicitly prohibiting pretextual stops and explicitly prohibiting suspicionless dog sniff traffic stop searches, as the use of both practices constitutes a huge leap forward, turning the land of Aloha into a police state. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jason Skyer on behalf of the people of the state of Hawaii and the county of Hawaii. Before I begin my kind of prepared comments, I just wanted to address a couple of the court's questions that they had for Ms. Hironaka, because I might be in a slightly better position to answer those, because I was actually the attorney that did the suppression hearing below. I can't remember which justice had questions about why was a cell phone used as opposed to just the regular police radio. And I realize there might be minimal facts on this in the record, but on the Big Island, the police radios, there's a number of spots where it doesn't catch, and just due to cellular coverage, most of the time cellular coverage is better than the radio coverage, so it's a quite common practice for police to use their cell phones to contact each other versus the police radio, just given the breadth of cell phone coverage in general on the island. another justice, and I can't remember which one, asked a question about why Officer Prudencio did not do the initial stop. And I think there's some facts in the record at the suppression hearing that Officer Prudencio testified that as a vice officer, he was not in a marked vehicle. He was in his police-subsidized vehicle, which is normally not equipped with a blue light to conduct the actual traffic stop. And so quite typically, should a vice officer determine that a traffic stop is necessary, they would call in a police officer who's in a car that's equipped with a blue light to conduct the stop. And finally, or two other things. It was asked why Officer Prudencio's police report was not admitted into evidence. At the hearing on this, it was offered by the defense attorney that conducted the hearing to refresh Officer Prudencio's recollection. I don't know why the defense attorney chose not to enter it into evidence at the particular hearing, but I would ask the court to go back and look at the record, too, because the court really bent over backwards to accommodate the defense attorney during the hearing on this matter. When you look at procedurally what happened, defense attorney chose to call several witnesses. During my case, I chose to only put the certified copy of the search warrant into evidence, and then I chose to not call any witnesses. Then the trial court chose to let the defense attorney, Mr. Obesogawa, reopen his case so that he could call Prudencio, so that he could call Officer Prudencio as a witness. And then finally, with regard to, I think, the Chief Justice's questions about the attorney issue that was brought out a little bit before we started hearing on the suppression hearing that was filed, and the court indicated that it would give leave to the trial counsel to file either a separate motion or an additional memorandum regarding the attorney issue. And so at this point, based on trial counsel's failure to do so, I would ask the court to consider that that point has been waived on appeal because the state was never given an opportunity to see what law the defense was relying on at the actual hearing and to present evidence to counteract any arguments they had. It was just never brought out at the hearing. So, and with that, I'll launch more into my prepared remarks.
Mr. Skyer, just to clarify something. If the vice officer had reasonable suspicion or probable cause to stop Mr. Estevillo, would he have to call the uniformed officer to watch out for Estevillo, trail him, and look for a traffic violation or as a reason to stop him?
Would that be legally required?
Would he have to, logically, realistically?
I don't see a reason. I mean, they might want to do it just to give additional justification for the stop, but I think legally, if the officer had sufficient articulable facts to meet a Terry standard, that based on that, a Terry stop could have been done.
So in this particular case, the vice officers didn't have specific articulable facts upon which to base reasonable suspicion that criminal activity was afoot with respect at least to drug offenses being committed by Mr. Estevillo.
To examine the specific articulable facts that Officer Prudencio would have, I would urge the justices to read the copy of the search warrant that was entered into evidence, because that outlines the specific information, the specific and articulable facts that Officer Prudencio had prior to the traffic stop being conducted.
And but if he had reasonable suspicion or probable cause to make the stop absent a traffic violation, then he could have, with the assistance of the uniform officer.
That's correct.
And I'm assuming because he didn't, and he didn't have at that point reasonable suspicion to make the stop.
I think that's asking me to form to characterize to the court what Officer Prudencio felt that he had. But I think based on my review of the search warrant and the information contained, it was much more legally prudent for them to have the additional reasonable and articulable facts based on the traffic violation.
The search warrant was obtained after the stop, after the arrest, and primarily for the purpose of examining a container within the vehicle or something like that?
There were two search warrants. One was for the vehicle itself, and the second one was there was a container that was found in Mr. Estabilio's, I believe, pants pocket when a pat-down was conducted after he was placed under arrest.
Thank you.
What specific facts are you referring to that comes from the search warrant that would justify the detention for drugs?
Officer Prudencio talks about the information that was in his possession based on information that he gleaned from other vice officers and information that he gleaned from the informant in this case.
And was it more specific than what's been brought out today in terms of identifying a reliable source?
Not really, Your Honor.
Mr. Skyer, the dog, where's the dog usually kept?
In a situation like this, the dog was in Officer Kyocho's car.
I know he was in the car when they stopped him, but, I mean, does he spend all day driving around in the car? Isn't he usually in a kennel or in a police station or something?
That's correct. There's a kennel at the Hilo police station where the dog is normally kept.
So why was the officer driving around with the dog in his car, or was he driving around? He was actually parked and waiting for a call, wasn't he?
Correct. I think the testimony during the suppression was that this particular area was right across the street from a school. After Mr. Estabilio had turned into the driveway, they didn't want to block traffic unnecessarily, and so they staged the other officer down the street where he wouldn't be obstructing traffic. In the event that Mr. Estabilio said no to a consent search, then the dog would be right there and would be immediately available, but wouldn't be there blocking traffic.
So when did they call? You said they staged him. When did they give him the call to stand by? Was it before they stopped him?
I don't think so. I'd have to look at the record again, but my recollection was that they didn't know exactly where the traffic stop of Mr. Estabilio was going to happen, so I think all the officers were listening to the police radio because Officer Paoli called off on the police radio about the location of the stop.
If time is the only consideration in a stop, Could police officers in doing random DUI stops, could they just have a dog standing by to sniff everybody they stop if they don't take more time than necessary? If you follow Barros instead of Bolasan?
Assuming there's an objectively valid reason for the stop, then the answer to that question would be yes.
So you know the when they do one every four cars, they pull over every fourth car. There's nothing to stop the police officers from just keeping a dog by there and sniffing every fourth car that comes by then.
I don't know exactly how long the contact at that point takes and whether that minimal amount of contact would be sufficient time to have the dog screen conducted before the motorist goes on his way. I don't know the amount of time we're looking at in that scenario.
How long did it take for the dog to screen the car in this stop? Less than 10 minutes, right?
Correct. So what we're really looking at here in this situation is, I think defense attorney concedes that the stop at its foundation was initially an objectively valid stop. I think even Mr. Estabilio on the stand admitted that he was violating traffic laws prior to being pulled over by Officer Paoli. He admitted that at some point between the Chinese restaurant and the place where he was stopped, he realized that he had left the dog out and he was trying to hurry home so that the dog wouldn't run away. And he admitted basically that he knew that he was speeding before being pulled over by Officer Paoli. So I think under anybody's observations of the facts, that the stop at its inception was objectively valid. And also, with regard to the expired weight tax sticker, the documentation that the weight tax sticker was, in fact, expired, despite the fact that his car had a valid sticker, that was proven at the hearing on this matter. The certified document from the Department of Finance showing that the weight tax on the vehicle had not been paid was entered into evidence, so that's part of the record. So really what you're looking at here is a contemporaneous investigation between Officer Paoli conducting the traffic investigation and Officer Prudencio investigating the narcotics investigation. And the way that we know that the narcotics investigation was continuing, first of all, there was a finding of fact made by the court when the court denied Mr. Estabilio's motion that at all times prior to the dog alert, there was an ongoing traffic investigation. Is Officer Paoli and Officer Prudencio testified that normal police procedure when they encounter one of these fraudulent weight tax sticker is to remove the sticker from the vehicle, and no attempt had been made, and the sticker had not been removed from the vehicle yet. And I think both of the officers testified that's at least a five-minute process in getting out the razor blade and scraping the illegal sticker off the vehicle. So
Officer Paoli was just standing by. He didn't go get a razor blade, even though that was really one of the basis for his stop.
I think defense attorney really takes, there's one statement by Officer Paoli, and I think defense attorney really takes that out of context. When you look at the greater context of what was going on here, Officer Paoli testified that his first step after contacting defendant, acquiring his information, was to go back to the car and to make radio checks to determine if his license was actually valid, to run a warrant check, and then you get Officer Prudencio's testimony that when he went to go to contact Officer Paoli, to inform Officer Paoli that the dog, in fact, had alerted to the vehicle and that defendant was going to be arrested, he observes Officer Paoli on the radio. So I think when you put that together, the phrase that defense attorney is trying to take out of context is Officer Paoli is just waiting for the information to come back. Granted, he was not writing citations during that period, and I think under the court's recent precedent, I think had he written citations and had they been issued to the defendant, we would be looking at a 701-109 problem, double jeopardy, because clearly the no-fault citation would have been a criminal violation based on defendant's admission that he had prior no-faults. So that becomes a petty misdemeanor, and clearly you'd be looking at...
I didn't really understand that argument in your brief, because they can cite an arrest, but doesn't our rules pertain to the trial of these charges? So it doesn't matter whether they cited him at that point or waited until they completed the drug investigation. Our rules pertain to trial, so that as long as they tried both the traffic offenses and the drug offenses at the same trial, there would be no problem. It's not when you issue the citation or make the arrest.
Correct, but procedurally, had he issued citations, then the citations would have had to have been dismissed, and there would have, at some point, they would have had to be added onto the charging document for the, either just dismissed outright and not pursued, or added onto the charging document for the drug case. Otherwise, if Mr. Estabilio had been smart and had come in an initial arraignment on the no-fault citation and immediately pled, then he would have a much stronger argument under 701-109 to come back and eventually say, listen, I cannot now be prosecuted for the drug
case. I don't want to prolong it, but obviously since we issued those decisions, the prosecution knows that they can continue or combine or ask that the charges be consolidated in one trial.
Correct. And ultimately, because the stop here was objectively valid, ultimately the defense position, and they don't come right out and say it, but ultimately what the defense position here is, they're asking the court to overrule Groves and to overrule Snitkin, because defense tries to characterize this as a federal law versus state law inconsistency, and when your honors examine the case law, even here in the state of Hawaii, there's sufficient, even absent the U.S. Supreme Court cases and the Federal Circuit cases, there's sufficient case law here in the state of Hawaii to reach the same conclusion. Under Groves and Snitkin expressly rejected any supposition that a separate reasonable suspicion would be needed to conduct a dog screen in the circumstances in Groves and Snitkin. And so basically what defense attorney is asking the court to do is to go back and to overrule those cases and announce a new rule. I think defense...
But Groves says you are not entitled to general exploratory searches, right?
Correct.
And Snitkin In that case, it wasn't considered a general exploratory search because they identified the messenger service as being one that was used by drug dealers, and they had statistical data to support that. Is that right?
That's correct.
And Snitkin also said that that kind of search of packages would be appropriate unless it caused embarrassment, humiliation, detention, and human confrontation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if you apply Snitkin, then wouldn't that be inconsistent with the Supreme Court's, the majority anyway, position in Cabales?
I think, first of all, to characterize what happened in Snitkin or Groves as a search is a mischaracterization, because I don't think any court, either the state court or the federal court, has held that a narcotic detection canine screen that only involves the sniffing of the airspace surrounding some sort of closed object constitutes a search, because I don't think anybody has said that there's that anybody, even in the state of Hawaii, has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the smell of contraband emanating from a closed container.
Well, in Snitkin, the court didn't say it was a search, but it came pretty close by saying that the use of a dog must be reasonable. And in determining whether or not a sniff, dog sniff, was reasonable, that you weigh against that, as I said, humiliation, intimidation, the fact that it's public, the fact that there might be human confrontation, and that you wouldn't be detaining anyone or anything.
Understood. And I think when the court examines the facts in this particular case and applies that reasoning to this particular case, all those factors are absent here. This was not, as defense characterizes it, a dog sniffing up somebody's skirt or doing anything offensive like that. At all times during the narcotic detection canine screen, Mr. Estabilio was seated in his car just as he would have been under an ordinary traffic stop, and I think every court that's looked at traffic stops really puts it under Terry. So he's not in any different situation that he would normally have been under an ordinary Terry traffic stop. This is not an aggressive dog. There was no entry into the vehicle by the dog. This was just merely the dog going around the exterior of the vehicle, and when it acquired the odor that it was trained to sniff for, it sat down. So this is not something that involved confrontation with a human being. This is not something that really caused undue attention to be drawn to this particular area. There's already several cops there conducting the traffic investigation. So I really think the addition of the narcotic detection canine screen here was a minimal intrusive value. He just merely went around the exterior of the vehicle and then sat down when he detected the smell of narcotics coming from within the vehicle. So I think the court's concerns in Snitkin don't apply here. And defense attorneys trying to kind of expand this case into something greater and more offensive than it is. And I would urge the court not to do so, that if eventually we have those facts where they're using the dog just kind of at the mall or something like that, that could be the proper case to be appealed. But on these particular facts, the use of the dog was not intrusive at all and presented no confrontation with people.
How do you distinguish Bolasan, or do you think Bolasan just does not apply under these facts?
No, I think Bolasan applies, but Bolasan applies looking at the objectively valid stop. Was the stop at its initiation objectively valid? And based on the testimony of Mr. Estabilio himself, it was an objectively valid stop. He admitted that he was speeding. Clearly, based on the documents that were entered into evidence at the suppression hearing, the weight tax sticker on his vehicle was unquestionably expired, even though it had a current sticker affixed to the vehicle. So I think under anybody's examination of the reasons, the initial reasons for the stop, and I think defense even concedes this, that the stop at its inception was objectively valid. And so I think at that point, the Bolasan requirement is satisfied. And really, when you look at Terry and you look at the scope element under Terry, I think it's being mischaracterized by the defense. When you look at how the United States Supreme Court has been interpreting the definition of scope under the second prong of Terry, if you look at Mueller versus Mena, 125, Supreme Court, 1465, they talk about the scope of Terry is really limited to the length of the detention. Mueller versus Mena is where a person is being detained pursuant to a search warrant that's being conducted at a residence. The person who is being detained is not the target of the search warrant. And police go on to ask that person her immigration status. It turns out that she is an illegal immigrant to the United States, and she ultimately sought to, it was a civil suit saying the police had illegally detained her, and the United States Supreme Court really goes on to say the scope, second prong of Terry, relates not to the scope of the reasons for the initial detention, but the scope, the length of time that it would take law enforcement to either quickly confirm or deny the reasons that justified the initial detention. And I think the later on in Illinois versus Cabalas, they go on and expand on this a little bit, so it has been applied to the traffic stop scenario. And so that's why my reading of Hawaii case law and federal case law is that the closest analogy to a traffic stop is really the Terry stop. And so I think under the federal analysis, how the United States Supreme Court has chose to analyze Terry, they come to the same conclusion as Barros here, that the scope of the Terry stop is really how long it takes officers to either quickly confirm or deny their initial suspicions that justify the Terry stop.
Do you agree that the confidential informant, according to the record, was anonymous?
Correct.
Mr. Skaya, doesn't the investigative detention have to be reasonably related to the purpose of the stop in the first place under Kaleohana?
I understand that's defense argument here, but I think under Barros, that's not what happens. Under Illinois versus Cabalas, under the...
So you think Barros overruled Bolasan and Kaleohana? Or made the reasonable relation test, we're not following it anymore? It's only a time consideration?
I think under the federal analysis of Terry, and when you combine it with what Barros said, that really the scope element of Terry relates to the amount of time that it would take to investigate and confirm or deny the reasons that justify the initial Terry stop. And so, basically, what you get here is an objectively valid stop. There's no search, except the search that was done pursuant to the warrant. It's interesting to note here that really the only major difference between this case and Illinois versus Cabalas is in Cabalas there was no attempt by the police officer who conducted the canine screen to actually contact the person in the vehicle and ask for consent. And when you look at the facts of this particular case, that's that's kind of a non-issue, because when Officer Prudencio talked to the defendant in the vehicle, he didn't get any incriminating information. There was no, other than Mr. Estabilio's denial of the consent to search, that was really the only information that was gained by Officer Prudencio, and then the canine screen was conducted. So aside from that one little wrinkle, you're looking at essentially the exact same facts as Illinois versus Cabalas here, and I think it would be a strange result if the fact that the officer had gone up and asked permission rather than just outright conducting the canine screen would provide any sort of reason to differentiate this case from the Cabalas case.
If we follow Cabalas, then that means what the defense has indicated would apply, that is that the police could take a dog down to a parking lot and sniff every gun. It's not a search.
That's correct.
Wouldn't that be a general exploratory search?
Probably.
Dogs make mistakes on sniffing.
If I could step back a second, I think that would depend on the particular circumstances of that particular case.
If you go down the street here, take the dog down this parking lot, sniff every car, does that violate Cabalas?
Absent any information that there was a particular car in the parking lot that had contraband. If they had that information, that would be a different scenario. But if they just kind of randomly went to the Alamo on a parking lot and started going up and down rows of cars, then yes, that would be a general search.
And so that wouldn't be, you think that's allowable under Caballes though?
I think it's a different situation than Caballes, because Caballes, you have somebody that's being otherwise lawfully detained. And that there's a objectively valid reason for police to be interacting with this person to begin with. And I think that's what differentiates this case from that kind of scenario, and also from the walk and talk cases. The walk and talk cases was a person who, under ordinary circumstances, would be completely free from the police encounter. Whereas here, you have somebody, based on his own illegal conduct, has made himself a target of the police encounter, and has made himself the subject of a police encounter. And for the police to come by and do something that's minimally intrusive, you know, based on the information that they had, I think.
So you say that Caballes allows a dog sniff on a traffic stop, right?
Correct.
So it doesn't have to be someone who's involved, say, or suspected of being involved in drug offenses.
That's what Caballes says.
So that we would be allowing on every traffic stop, if we follow Caballes, the police to do just a general investigation of crime. Is that correct?
Under Caballes, as long as it doesn't lengthen the detention beyond what would normally be required for the...
As long as it's a traffic stop, you can use a dog to ferret out crime in general.
Correct, as long as it doesn't otherwise lengthen the detention that would ordinarily happen as a result of a traffic stop.
Do you have any problems with Justice Ginsburg's dissent in that case that said it exceeds Terry in terms of the scope of the stop or of her belief, which seems to parallel Snitkin, that this kind of thing will cause embarrassment, intrude on people's liberties, because there's no other basis for believing crime aside, that crime exists or is afoot aside from the traffic violation?
Like I said before, I think in this particular case, and I think in depending on the type of dog that's used, if it's a passive dog like this, the embarrassment is minimal because all it really is a dog that's walking around the outside of the car and then sits down. I think to the average observer that's not trained on how to read the dog reaction, an average observer...
Dogs make mistakes.
Correct, but the standard to...
Souter, in fact, cites a lot of studies that indicate dogs do make mistakes on these dog sniffs.
That's correct, but that issue wasn't really brought out in this particular case. Defense attorney had an opportunity to contest the accuracy of the dog and whether or not the dog alert...
Snitkin is part of the argument in this case, and that goes to the reasonableness of a dog search.
That's correct, but ultimately... The standard to arrest pursuant to the dog screen would be probable cause, so I don't think probable cause
requires... We're talking about seizure, stopping, and being subjected to a dog sniff without probable cause and without reasonable suspicion to believe that anything occurred except a traffic violation.
Oh, correct. But I think if you're getting into false alerts by the dog, the threat would be that somebody is arrested for a false positive dog alert. And I think the standard for arrest is probable cause. And given that lower standard, that it's lower than beyond a reasonable doubt, that any sort of investigation under that standard, you're going to have people that are ultimately being arrested for things that ultimately, upon further investigation, the probable cause wasn't warranted because it's a lower standard.
Mr. Scare, I'm just curious. I'm not sure what the situation is, but I've seen dogs at the airport. Have you seen dogs at the airport sniffing around luggage and people's packages?
I travel internationally sometimes, so I normally see that when I'm at customs or immigration getting my bag.
I've seen it at the Honolulu airport on occasion, and I don't understand if they're sniffing for fruits, you know, that they're not supposed to, or drugs. Do you know?
One time I've encountered a dog like that, they smelled beef jerky in my bag. So in that scenario where I'm encountering them coming through customs, I assume that actually anything I say would be an assumption, but I assume they would probably be looking for the a larger scope of things, because coming through customs is a different scenario where they want to prevent, you know, meats and other, you know, rather than just purely contraband.
Do we have cases? Have you run across any cases like that in airports that suitcases are sniffed at, or and then they find that the dog alerts and progresses to arrest? Has there ever been a case like that?
I don't know. I haven't particularly researched that issue. I don't know. Ms. Karanaka knows.
Yeah. I mean, since this case was an airport case, I wasn't looking at it.
There's a case on Maui, Kachinian, where the dog, the person coming off the plane was stopped, and the police followed him till they got a dog. The dog sniffed the bag. The dog alerted, and the police opened the bag, and there were no narcotics in the bag. Maui.
Okay. I know that the dog, I noticed the red light's on, so I'll try to keep this brief. My understanding of the science behind the dog is the dog alerts to not the actual contraband itself, but a reaction that the contraband has with air and chemical byproducts that happen as a result of that. So somebody whose hand has been in recent contact with contraband that then touches the handle would be transferring not necessarily the contraband itself, but those chemical byproducts.
Is that the facts in Kachinian, do you know?
I'm sorry?
Was that the fact in Kachinian, the case?
I don't know. I haven't recently reviewed it, so I don't want to say something and wind up being wrong. But I noticed the red light is on, so I thank you for your time.
Mr. Inaka, anything else?
A couple of brief responses to some of the things that Mr. Skyer raised, which was that going back to, I think it was Justice Nakayama's question about the dog and where it was kept, all the vice unit in this case happened to be on call waiting for the Estabilio stop. So it was a planned kind of a thing. I believe they said in the Andrews Gym area was where Officer Prudencio was. And Officer Kyocho, they didn't say exactly where he was, but I was looking, transcript 83107 at page 15 was saying that he was parked waiting for the call. He was called and told to stand by. And it's clear that he was standing by there before the stop of the defendant in case, as happened in this case, the guy refused to consent to the search. And with regard to what Justice Nakayama had said about under the state's scenario, it's very possible to have a DUI stop where every fourth car or so you could just have a dog standing by there. With regard to what the prosecutor argued about the dog in this case was not an aggressive dog, and therefore we should just kind of have nothing to fear. I believe it was the Tella case where the dog was fairly aggressive and jumped into the car without even being asked or so by his trainer, his handler, and went around all inside the car. And then the police later said, or the state later argued, oh, you know, we couldn't control the dog, you know, it just kind of went in. But again, you know, there's no... you know, we don't know which dog is gonna do that, not do that, but the danger remains the same about having dogs intimidating or acting aggressively towards people, and especially if, as Mr. Skyer was saying, that there's some kind of residue or something on somebody's hand, clearly the dog's gonna appear to be aggressive because they're gonna be sniffing at the person's body. And then with regard to, I think it was Justice Acoba's question about the search warrant, again, it appears that the search warrant information, I haven't read the search warrant recently, but that the information to obtain the consent to search would be information that was gained from the search on the street there. And so it's not information that was known to the police prior to them having stopped and done this investigation, Mr. Estabilio. Finally, with regard to the traffic sticker and whether it was had been razored off or not, I believe the record on appeal showed that they towed the car to the police station, and that's where they razored off the tax emblem for the violation. But it's really clear that that was sort of like an afterthought. It was part of the drug investigation to kind of wrap up the whole thing, and the tax sticker was not even of concern at that point. So I will rest on my previous arguments and ask that the court really seriously look at the two dangerous practices in this case, the pretextual stop and the suspicionless drug dog sniff search. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The court will take this case under advisement.
Thank you.